copywriting really is a superpower, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's not me saying that. That's Dan Kennedy who said that. I mean, you can get, if you've got the right audience and you've got the right offer and you've got direct response copy in there, you can get anything you want.
In today's episode, I sit down with Scott Martin, a copywriter that's been in the trenches for a long time. We're going to be uncovering the surprising way people read copy and the correct structure of copy to get maximum revenue. Welcome to Health Business Mastery, the Creative Thirst Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Hewitt. In the last 10 years, Scott Martin has quietly been one of the most productive direct response copywriters. He wrote over 350 promotions for Revolution Golf, which was acquired by NBC and Universal. He also helped launch several of the top dietary supplement brands, including Nugenix and Beneflex. In total, Scott helped generate over $500 million in revenue in the last 10 years. He has worked with many of the top direct response marketers. Scott has also written copy and has taken detours into the corporate communications, sales magazine, and publishing routes, as well as writing books. He's the author and editor of 18 books, including a book about Caddyshack, and he also just released his first book about copywriting called The Ultimate Business Superpower, published by Insurgent Press. He lives deep in the mountains of Colorado, where he's a part-time ski instructor with his Level 2 certification from the Professional Ski Instructors of America. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much indeed for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I know we've crossed paths many times in the past, and I'd love to just sit down with you and talk about copywriting. You know, you're a legend in the field.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
Well, you've certainly worked for some companies and helped them get to the point where they could sell and have a massive exit. So I would put that in legendary status.
Well, thank you. You're kind.
Let's kind of start talking about some of the things you've learned over the years of writing, and specifically the surprising way people read copy.
Yes, because that's something that is really misunderstood by so many people, especially by those people who don't really understand direct marketing and how direct response copy works. They will look at a full-page ad in a newspaper, or they will look at a landing page, a sales page that has just thousands of words of copy, and they'll go, who is ever going to read that? Now, let's make it a lot shorter.
Yep, that's the response everybody says when they first come across a long-form sales letter.
Okay. And those people don't understand how people read copy, which is bizarre because it's exactly how they probably read copy. So there are basically three types of reader. We are beginning with the fact that the person who is looking at the copy has an interest in what's on the page. So if they have really bad breath, and it's impacting their life in various ways, and they get to this page that has a solution for them, then they're going to read that page in, well, there will be three types of reader. There'll be the person who looks at the headline, scans through the copy, and might even buy at that stage, because there's enough information for them to try the product. Then there'll be somebody who dives a little deeper, looks at the headline, maybe looks at some bullets that are immediately under the headline, and then goes through a little bit more, but still buys. They'll look at the captions, they'll look at some photographs. There's probably a paragraph or two in there that is especially important to them. And that'll be enough. And then they'll try the product or the service. And then there's the person who will read every single word twice, but they won't do it in a linear fashion. They won't start at the headline and scroll all the way down to the bottom, or if it's in a newspaper or a magazine, they won't start at the top and then go all the way to the bottom. They will move around. One thing that a lot of people do is they'll look at the headline, maybe a couple of bullet points, a few other things, and they'll find out how much it costs. And if it's a reasonable price point to them, or maybe even if it isn't sometimes, then they'll start reading more because they'll think, okay, that sounds okay. So, you know, nobody reads copy from the beginning at the top of a page to the very end of the page all in one sitting. They bounce around. So what does that mean? That means as a copywriter, you've got to set up the copy for those three types of reader. It means you can't just have pages and pages of dense copy. You've got to work with a graphic designer or a developer to organize things so that, let's say, that first reader who's just going to glance at a few things can quickly get the gist of what's going on with that product or service. Maybe it's some pull quotes. Maybe it's captions under a carefully chosen photograph. Maybe there's a video in there, like that minute or two. Maybe you got some things in bold. You got bulleted lists. We're breaking up this dense copy, this dense message, into easily digestible bits. We got subheads that draw people into the copy. So you have to set up the copy so that somebody who's interested in the product will buy it. And there are three of the, and so we attract and appeal to those three types of reader. And I can pretty quickly tell when I'm looking at a sales page or some type of direct response ad, whether or not the copywriter really understands how people really read copy.
I like to think about those things you mentioned as little mental speed bumps. Right, places where you want to actually slow them down from scrolling because you want to catch their eye or catch their interest even, right? Because you're right, there are maybe two paragraphs that someone would read in that second type of reader, and you want to make sure that that particular viewer or buyer or prospect catches those speed bumps in order to read those two or three paragraphs that he or she needs to make that purchase. So that can be done, like you said, yeah, with the copy itself, or it could be done in the design phase as well,
or both.
Yeah, ideally both.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a graphic designer or a developer who understands the three types of reader, even better.
Absolutely, because there's a lot of good direct response copy that can be killed in the design stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan Kennedy, I was listening to a tape of his a while ago, and he says, look, it's the job of the copywriter to help with the layout. And a direct response copywriter should understand graphic design for direct response.
Yeah, there's so many designers out there. It works the other way around too, right? There's so many designers out there who don't understand direct response that when you're given direct response copy from someone like you, they almost don't know what to do with it. Or they just look at it from a make it pretty point of view. And they're not aware of all the psychology that's going on behind it. All the places where they need to inject those mental speed bumps visually with size, weight, color, font, images.
Exactly. And I wish that Clayton Makepeace's blog was still up and running. You know, he passed away about 2.5 years ago. Famous, brilliant direct response copywriter, in case people in your audience don't know who he was. He had a blog on his website, and one of the entries covered this exact subject, which is designing for direct response. Unfortunately, it's no longer around anymore. Hopefully that'll change, but hopefully there are some other resources out there that show people how to do it.
You mentioned a few interesting things about the three different types of people that go through a direct response page. One was the person who just kind of looks for the price, right? So in heat maps and screen recordings and doing A/B testing on long form copy, one thing I've noticed is some people scroll all the way down to the bottom and almost consume the page from the bottom up. And my hypothesis is that those are the people that are looking for, what is this about? How much is this going to cost? Right. And then they're validating that immediately by finding the offer on the page and saying, if it's okay with them, right? If they're looking at the offer and saying, all right, that's reasonable price, then they'll continue to consume the page, usually from the bottom up. Those people that find the offer that want to know that information and it's too much, they'll bail, right? So those people, we're not going to convert. For the ones that do want to know the offer, what is your feeling on some direct response copy that hides the offer, right? Maybe they're doing a pre-sale page, maybe they're doing a long-form sales page, but they're not putting the offer on the page, right? In the case of a VSL, a lot of the trends is that I'm seeing now is to take people directly to the order page. So they're not even seeing the offers under the VSL or on the sales page at all. They're just seeing like an option to buy, which takes them to a separate page.
So let me just go backwards for a second to answer that question. I've seen people reveal a crazy price, crazy high price on a sales page. And it's the crazy high sales price that moves people into reading the copy, because they go, hang on, why is that so expensive? Must be something here. So and I bought that type of product myself. So
I think
guilty as charged.
What you're referring to, I think, is the is anchoring high, right? And it's almost like setting up the price objection. It's typically in the close section, right? So it's like you put the high price up first and in the copy rather. And then you say it's not going to be that, it's going to be this. Is that what you mean?
No, just having a really high price where the copy justifies that high price. Okay. Yeah, I've seen people do that. Dan Kennedy does that really well.
So you're using like a high price as a hook?
Yeah, kind of a sort of shock. Like, why is that so expensive?
Right.
What's going on here? So that's one strategy that I've seen people use. In terms of hiding the price, there have been some famous companies that have regularly done that, like Titleist in golf used to do that a lot. Maybe they still do it. I don't know. But, you know, it's kind of rare. It's one of those things where usually somebody has the price somewhere on the page and then somebody will look at that price and kind of start to make some decisions about whether or not they're going to go to the next step. In terms of VSLs, yeah, a VSL is a direct response thing. There's no question about that. But it's a slightly different animal. You're right. You don't reveal any sort of price initially. You know, a lot of people use it for list acquisition with kind of a low price product at the front end. But you're right. I mean, it's kind of bizarre to me sometimes how well those VSLs work when, you know, the person who is going through the VSL has no idea what the price is. But I've also seen VSL tracking software where, you know, the number of viewers, you know, steadily declines as you start going through the VSL. And then you mention the price, and there's a bit of a cliff. And then it sort of levels out again. But yeah, I mean, there are lots of different ways to reveal pricing. There's no right way or wrong way necessarily. But, you know, there are different ways to do it. I typically like to go the normal route and just have that price on the page and then let people decide, but have lots of copy on that page that's motivating them to try the product or the service and to justify that price. You know, and I'll just say one more thing that I've been meaning to say, I've forgotten to. You want to do all of this ethically, because there's a school within the direct marketing fraternity, mix my metaphors there, that says, just say anything you want. Just make it up. And those are the people who end up in jail. Okay? We're not trying to trick anybody. We're not trying to rip anybody off. We're just trying to say, here, we've got something that we think will help you, and we just want you to try it. That's all. And here's why we think you should. And if you don't like it, send it back. We'll send you money back. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's, you have to think about it like you should have a great product, first off.
Yes.
And if your product is really great, if it is best in the world, then it is your ethical right, your ethical obligation, if you will, to get that into the people who really, in the hands of the people who need it the most.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and if they don't like it, give them the money back.
100%.
Yes. That's a pretty good deal. You don't see branding people doing that.
No.
Exactly. When do you see a guarantee in a branding ad? Never. No, but we do it in direct response. You know? Ron Papil, he said, hey, if you don't like it, I don't want your money. Send it back. I'll get your money back. You know?
On the direct response side, that's the risk direct response marketers take, the risk of returns, the risk of putting your heart on your sleeve, right? The risk of saying it does what you said it will do, mm-hmm. In an ethical way with proof backed up behind it. And you be the judge as the consumer. You can't get any more honest than that.
Exactly. Very fair. It's a pretty good deal.
It's a great deal. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the structure of the copy.
So direct response copy should have the classic direct response structure. Now, in branding advertising, they don't care about structure because they're just off in their own world trying to make people feel a certain way about certain things. Whereas in direct response, we're using proven direct response tactics and strategies to drive people to try the product or the service. So in a very broad sense, there's the formula AIDA, which is attention, interest, desire, action. So to get people's attention, you have the headline, the lead. To get their interest going, you start talking about not necessarily the product right away, but the problem that you're going to solve. You're getting them interested. You're getting them on your side. And then you start to get the desire going by talking about the product and the benefits, the features, the things that are going to help that reader get what they want to get. And then, of course, action is the call to action. It's price justification, it's the guarantee, it's all the things that are going to overcome objections and motivate people to try the product or the service, plus a guarantee. So to go into a very specific structure, this is kind of how I like to do it. I've got a headline block, which has got a pre-head, a headline, some bullet points. Sometimes there's a video, 4 to 5 minutes long, which is kind of the ad for the ad. It's motivating people to read the copy. We used to do that at Revolution Golf, and it was really successful. So you've got those attention-grabbing elements right there. And then you've got four or five paragraphs, maybe these paragraphs, maybe more, detailing, let's say, the problem, why the person is experiencing that problem, something that's of definite interest to the potential reader or the potential customer. And that can be somewhat short, it can be somewhat long, depending on the problem. But that's where you are using empathy. That's where you are getting that person on your side and showing them that you understand what they're going through and that you understand the problem. Then it's time to start introducing the product or the service, starting with some features. Okay, here's the product. Here are the actual features. It's quite often right here that I see people make a big mistake by not showing the actual product and detailing exactly what you are going to get. I see that mistake all the time in all sorts of advertising. And then we want to start getting into features. Sorry, not features, benefits that correspond with those features. We also want to weave into the copy proof elements. And then we want to start talking about reasons why you should get this particular product. And then we'll move into some of the closing elements, like a guarantee, like those testimonials, like some copy about overcoming price objections, why this is such a great deal. We'll put some urgency in there. You know, this offer will go away Tuesday with a countdown timer. And then we'll start getting into some further closing things like the crossroads close. And then a signature and then a PS. And maybe underneath the PS, there's a Q&A section. So that, in a nutshell, is the basic structure of direct response copy. And that structure could be in a very long form sales page on the web that's 15,000 words long. Or it could be in an advertorial where you've only got 600, 700 words. Or it could be in an ad that you still see in a magazine. I was looking at Parade magazine the other day. I hadn't seen it for ages, for years. And there in the back is a really nice advertorial for a guy who's selling dietary supplements, a guy I've worked for in the past, actually. So that same structure has to be there. And let's say if you want to understand this structure even more, go to YouTube and look for a Ron Papil advertorial or infomercial, rather. You will see that same basic structure is there. Go to QVC, watch 30 minutes of QVC. And they're all about direct response. And you will see the same basic structure. It's only an absolute idiot in direct response who decides, okay, I'm going to deviate from this structure because I'm so clever and I'm so original.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As far as that structure goes, right, one thing you mentioned is that you see people mess up on the feature section of the product, like the product reveal section. Are there any other pitfalls you're seeing that people are making other than deviating from that structure at all?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I see is a lack of awareness when it comes to proof elements. And I mentioned those earlier. As much as you can, you want to back up claims with proof elements. And there's a company I used to work with in Australia, a really great digital marketing agency called Marketing Results. And if you Google Marketing Results list of proof elements, you'll get this amazing infographic that's absolutely free on their site that will give you 45 different proof elements. I see people regularly just not paying any attention, not enough attention to proof. Proof is, that's where you get the real bump in conversion and revenue. And it's something that the great copywriters like Gary Bensavenger really understood. And again, if you look at that Ron Papil infomercial, or if you go to a QVC half-hour segment selling something, you will see so much believable proof. You know, if a guy's selling knives and he takes that knife and he slices it through a can, what a great proof element that is.
Product demos are one of the strongest proof elements.
Right. So let's say if you've got a sales page, why not incorporate some video in there? It's not hard to do. Or if you've got some great testimonials, get some of those in there because those are great proof elements. If you've got before and after photographs, get those in there. You know, there are so many different proof elements. Let's say you're selling some type of dietary supplement and you've got a couple of graphs that show, you know, the impact on somebody's blood glucose after taking this particular supplement. Then get that graph in there, but make sure you have a caption, make sure the graph is clear, make sure you put something on the graph with arrows pointing, saying before and after and these sort of things.
Very direct response-y.
Yeah, but, and don't overdo it. You know, I've seen promotions for, let's say, financial services type products that are just jammed full of numbers, and all you do is lose the reader. So you have to choose those proof elements very, very carefully. And again, that's kind of where the elite level direct response copywriters separate themselves from the others by understanding what to keep in there and what not to keep in there and how much proof is too much proof and how to use proof correctly.
You think the proof aspect has changed in a post-COVID world? I mean, before COVID, right, there was just misinformation out there in terms of health. There still is, right? But now in a post-COVID world, everyone is just hyper alert on like what they believe or what they choose to believe or what they think is real or fake news. Like I'm thinking trust has always been eroding for a long time. And I think that erosion of trust has increased since post-COVID. How do you think that impacts the way a copywriter should approach that element of proof or trust in a supplement direct response piece?
That's such a great question. And this is such a controversial subject.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to shy away from some controversial statements here.
Go for it.
You know, I've been on teams that have successfully launched some dietary supplements and some other health products. And we all know that the level of skepticism is through the roof. You know, I've worked on, I remember one product in particular, which was for people who are suffering from some type of joint pain. And, you know, I'm going up to somebody who has joint pain through my copy and through the traffic and saying, I've got something here that you should try. And we had all the proof elements. We had testimonials from doctors. We had a clinical study. We had some great proof. And with a soft offer, we were getting about a 5% opt-in to try the product.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's off the charts. 5% is off the charts. Okay. But yet here comes the government and various others saying, here, take this shot. We've tested it a little bit. It's the first time we're using this technology. There might be some side effects, including death or some type of permanent condition. But don't worry, it's safe. Go ahead and take it. And by the way, if you don't take it, you're going to lose your job. And they got this uptake of what? 70%? 60%? What was it in the United States? Everyone just willingly went into some clinic, saw some complete stranger, rolled up their arm, said, woohoo, I've got the jab. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how they managed to do that. When with a great product that, or just asking you to try it, this dietary supplement that's all natural, no drugs at all, we're just asking you to try it for 30 days, 60 days. And if you don't like it, you get your money back. That's all we're asking you to do. How easy is that? And it's research. We've got doctors and so on and so forth. So are people more skeptical when it comes to the products that we sell in direct response? I think that whole COVID thing and the shots and everything was such an aberration that it's not part of the equation. I still think that if you get 3% to 5% to try a product or a service, even a health product, they're still doing pretty well, and people are ultra, ultra skeptical. That's just my thinking about it. Somebody might be throwing stuff around the room wanting to kill me right now for those controversial subjects, but you have to admit, that's a pretty amazing sales job.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. When it comes to taking a substance that no one really knows anything about.
Yeah, when you position it that way, it really is.
It was tested for 5 months when it normally takes a vaccine 7 years to get through the gestation and testing period. I'm still stunned. I'm not judging people who took it or didn't take it. I'm just looking at it from a direct marketing perspective.
100%. I think also part of the magic formula, if you will, is belief. Right? So the supplement market itself, there's a big aspect of belief that goes into purchasing and using supplements, right? You could take vitamin D every day, you take a multivitamin every day, and you don't really feel a difference, but the belief behind it, like if your values and belief systems are that, yeah, this thing is helping me, it's easier to convert if you're tapping into those beliefs. Same thing, I think, with the vaccine, right? For those people that were that was against their beliefs, their internal beliefs system, the psychology of the way they think, right? Those people didn't convert. They didn't. They didn't get the vaccine, right? So aligning the sales message, the copy, with the belief system, supporting it with the proofs / trust, credibility, I think is a big part in supplements specifically. You know, other products don't really have that. You know, if you're buying a specific golf club, sure, the benefits are, you know, you can list out benefits for a golf club, you can list out benefits for a supplement, but you don't need to align with an internal belief system. You just need to tap into the desire for a golf club. You do need to tap into the desire for a supplement too, but you also need to go above and beyond with a supplement. Would you agree, disagree? What are your viewpoint on that?
I would go to Eugene Schwartz's great book, Breakthrough Advertising.
Yeah, you can't create desire. You can only tap.
But you're absolutely right when it comes to belief. Because somebody who's going to try a dietary supplement has to have some degree of belief that a dietary supplement is going to help them, where a traditional type of chemical-based pharmaceutical product isn't, or is going to have some type of side effects they don't want.
There's also crossover there, I think, right? Maybe I'm wrong in this, but I think there's crossover between the two markets, if you're real, right? If one market is anti-big pharma, which is a big, you know, key element in the formula of direct response, right? But then there's another market of like, you know, I'm okay with prescription medications. And there's a crossover there. I think that some of the people that are okay with prescription medications are inclined to also buy a supplement, right? Now, there are levers you could pull there, right? Basically, you can pull the lever of, if you have that Venn diagram and the crossover in between those two markets, the lever that I think should be pulled is almost a lever of shame, right? It's like, yeah, you're taking the prescription medications, but you don't feel good about it. You'd rather take the non-prescription. And then there's the market of like, I'm taking the prescription and I'm fine with it, but I'm open to, you know, supplements that are different from what I'm taking. If I'm taking a pain subscription, I'm open to a brain supplement or a sleep supplement. And it almost doesn't matter for those people.
Yeah, there is some crossover there. But going back to golf, because you mentioned golf, where I've written a lot of copy, there certainly is a desire to be better at golf.
Absolutely. Very competitive market.
Yeah. The number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, right now as we speak, he wants to get better at golf. That's the crazy thing about golf. But there's also a belief, as a really strong belief, that there's a way to get better at golf through instruction, by working with somebody who's really good and at teaching and at golf, and also through some type of gadget. And there's usually a connection between those two, because the gadgets are usually sold or promoted by teaching professionals.
Mm.
So there's definitely that desire there. And there's also a general belief in the market among a big chunk of golfers that I can get this club, or I can get this gadget or this instructional DVD, my life on the golf course will be a lot better.
You think the competitive market for supplements, like, because I'm looking at it as like, there's different niches in the supplement space, right? So the competitive person in the supplement world would be like taking a nootropic, right? Or something like that to make themselves better. But then there are other sub markets in there, right? The weight loss market, and they're not really competitive. I guess the opposite of competitive, right? Then there's like the, if you wanted to niche it down even further, there's so many niches, but just as an example, let's just take those two. You think it's easier to sell supplement to a competitive person versus a non-competitive person? Now, they would be two completely different supplements, right? One is a nootropic and one is, let's say, a weight loss.
In a big chunk of that market, you've got people who've got a problem. You know, it's the bleeding neck thing.
Right. There's a problem on both in both niches, if you will, right?
Right.
There's always a problem.
Right. So I have got a problem with joint discomfort. And, you know, I'm really looking for kind of a natural solution. Maybe they've tried the prescription medication and they couldn't take the side effects or whatever's going on. So there's that problem solution element in there. And then there's a chunk of people in that market who also believe in prevention, and that you need to eat certain things and take certain things to prevent problems from starting in the first place. That's a harder sell generally, although there are enough people who have that belief system that you can, you know, find enough of them to sell a really good dietary supplement that's going to prevent higher blood pressure or prevent clogged arteries, or help with this, or help with that. So right. That's my experience of that market.
If they're not already struggling with the problem, right? Or in a totally different way, it's much harder to sell someone a multivitamin because there's no bleeding of the neck problem than it is to sell someone, you know, a sleep supplement where, you know, if you have trouble with sleeping, it really affects your life and a whole bunch of other things. So the bleeding neck is bleeding even more, if you will, right? It's a bigger problem, or I don't want to say more important, but it's higher on the list of bleeding neck than a multivitamin, which is much lower on the list.
Yeah. But there are loads of people who really believe in prevention and mm-hmm. the importance of nutrition and how dietary supplements fit into that mix.
If you're writing a direct response letter to that niche, to the prevention niche, would your approach change at all? The structure would probably stay the same, but.
Oh, the structure would be exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you've got to press on the potential problems that might happen if you don't take this type of supplement, and this is what can happen. And I think in that particular space, it's so important to have a testimonial or a real backbone to the whole promotion that comes from a doctor. So if you see a lot of the people who have a lot of the success in the prevention space, a lot of that comes directly from a doctor. You know, Dr. Mercola, Dr. Sears, Dr. Sinatra. Those are the ones who seem to have the most success with prevention, because you've got an authority saying, I really don't want you to get this, so take this.
Right. They've also built up their brands around prevention as well. Right.
So yeah, to a certain degree, yes.
So they've attracted the prevention audience.
Mm-hmm.
And honed down on that niche. In the supplement space, what would you say are like the top biggest pain points, or the top biggest categories of seller, right? Or if someone wanted to go into supplements, what niche would you recommend?
The usual suspects.
Yeah, heart, right? Sleep.
Yeah, I would actually go look a little bit differently, because if you look at what motivates people to buy and get specific to health, so it's age. It's looking great, trying to look younger. It's being able to lead your life the way you want to lead it. So if you look at those big categories right there, and then go down a little bit deeper into what the actual supplement's going to do. So let's say everyone wants to look younger. They don't want to look older. So you've got some type of collagen-based dietary supplement. You can say, well, you look older because it's kind of related to collagen and some other things too. But the reason that your joints don't feel so good maybe is collagen. Collagen will help you maintain really strong skin, hair, joints, and so on and so forth. So you have to remember those big items. Like, I don't have a love life with my significant other anymore. Okay? Which is kind of part of getting older for some people. So what's the desire? The desire is to get younger. The desire is to get back to that youthful element in that part of your life. So then you can sort of go from there. But you've got to remember those big drivers, those things that people really, really want, because they'll pay for those things. And I have proof right outside my window here, right outside my building in Aspen, Colorado, where women in their 60s and 70s are trying to look like they're 40. And men too, to be fair. And they're spending a lot of money on that stuff. If I'm selling a collagen dietary supplement, you know, I want to get into my research and I want to start asking the manufacturer, okay, what have you had success with? What sort of angles have worked before? What are you trying to do? What do you want to try? And let's say they want to target athletes, middle-aged athletes who want to keep going, who want to keep their performance up and want to keep enjoying all their sports. Well, in that particular case, you know, you can start driving traffic based on that. You can get lists of middle-aged athletes. You can start attacking it that way. And then you can, I would in the copy, start building it all around, dear middle-aged athlete, we want to keep you going. We want to keep your knees strong. We want to keep your back strong. We want to do this. We want to do that to help you keep performing and keep enjoying all the stuff that you do. And this is why you should be taking collagen and this particular type of collagen. But then I would definitely include all the other benefits for sure. Absolutely. Your skin's going to look great. Your hair's going to look great. You know, it's going to help with bone structure or whatever else it is that, that collagen does. I take collagen, so I should know more about this than I do. But yeah, I mean, you know, I take collagen dietary supplements because a couple of people that I trust with my health said I should look into it. And then it's also for the health of the parts of my joints, like ligaments and things like that.
Right. And then those people who you know, who that section is important to in the copy, will find it through those things we mentioned earlier, right? That type of a reader. And also by putting those mental speed bumps in, they'll read the section of hair that they need to read because that's important to them. And those who are, it's not important to, will likely skim by that and scroll past and read the section on joints that
right, because they need to read. The guy who's looking at the copy, the middle-aged athlete who wants to keep going, has lost all his hair. He doesn't care. He's going to miss that bit. Okay?
Yep. Exactly. Which is another niche in the supplement world, right? Hair loss is a very big niche.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you look at some old ads from back in the day, 20s, 30s, that was a, people were selling stuff for that.
I love looking at those old ads. Also a big fan of Rumpel Peel and all those infomercials. As a kid, I would just devour them. I loved watching them. That's probably what got me into direct response. Well, Scott, this has been a lot of fun. I would like you to, if anyone wants to contact you, anyone wants to learn more, if anyone wants to read your book, where can they go to find you?
Yeah, the best place is my website, which is scottmartincopywriter.com. And to the right-hand side of the menu, there's a button which says store. And I've got several resources for copywriters and marketers. And there are two that I'd like to highlight a little bit. First of all, is my book about copywriting. It's called The Ultimate Business Superpower. I wrote it for people who are small business owners and marketers, so they understand direct response copywriting and direct marketing. Then there's also a resource which is great for copywriters who have got going, who work for an agency or work for an in-house marketing department. It's called the Aspen School of Copywriting. And it will help you if you're a copywriter and you really kind of want to get to the next level. And your company will probably pay for access to it as well. So those are two resources. And the Aspen School of Copywriting has 350 look over my shoulder videos where you watch me write copy. That's how I've set the whole thing up. So it's kind of different from most training courses. But go to scottmartincopywriter.com/store or the store button. And that's where you'll find all the goodies.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bobby. It's been great to chat. I could chat for hours about all of this. I love it. And it's just great to have an opportunity to bring some of this to the people who listen to your podcast. Thank you.
Creative Thirst is a direct response digital agency focusing on conversion rate optimization and A-B testing. We work with dietary supplement companies who are struggling to maximize the profitability of their funnels so they can scale. Through the last 7 years in the online health space, we've optimized many dietary supplement businesses. And in that time, we've uncovered the three critical funnels for success. We put together that information in a free digital download called The Three Funnels Every Health Supplement Business Needs to Build a Multi-$1 Million Empire. You can get that free report by going to creativethirst.com. Scroll down to the appropriate section and click on the blue Get Your eBook button.